Hello, welcome to Interdependent Study, our podcast where we engage in the learning and unlearning work for collective liberation. I'm Aaron.
And I'm Damien. Thank you so much for joining us today. Each week, we'll bring something new to the table and discuss our thoughts and feelings about it through the lenses of who we are and where we can go for a more just society.
We want Interdependent Study to be a space where we're always learning with one another. And Damien, you're up this week. What are you bringing to the table today?
I am so excited to be bringing our April book to the table today.
Yes.
The book we have been reading for the past few weeks is called Practicing New Worlds, Abolition and Emergent Strategies by the one and only Andrea J. Ritchie. And it was just published in October of last year. So it's still pretty new. Definitely encourage folks to check it out by our friends over at AK Press. The book actually features a foreword written by Alexis Pauline Gums and an introduction by Adrienne Marie Brown, which were, I think, both excellent ways to kick off this book.
Yeah.
In her introduction, in fact, Adrienne Marie Brown offers, I thought, a really great and succinct description of what Andrea does in this book. So I pulled that because I thought it would be a great way to share what this book was all about. So Adrienne says this, quote, "With Practicing New Worlds, Andrea offers us a deepening of emergent strategy. In addition to her own reflections and scholarship of how emergent strategy and abolitionist movements intertwine, Andrea lets us in on a conversation among all kinds of people doing this work about how the small, relational, and visionary moves we can accumulate, converge, and ultimately shift culture at the largest scale. This is how change has happened, both in abolition work and throughout human history." Mm-hmm. And then just a few lines later, she goes on to say this, quote, "By looking at abolition through the lens of emergent strategy, element by element, Andrea uplifts the organizing strategies that are already creating more possibilities for our collective liberation and points to the experiments and practices we can be in to advance toward the world we are co-creating." And I, for me, I was like, I'm not sure I could have done a better job introducing this book. So many thanks to Adrienne Marie Brown for that. But I think for me, this book certainly offers us a lot to think about in terms of potential strategies we can use to create a world that's not reliant on policing and the criminal punishment system, and a world where everyone has what they need in order to live safely and in community with one another.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've been so eager to get this book to the table, to get to talk about this incredible book with you. So let's get into it. What did you think of this book? Where do you want to start, my friend?
Yeah, I loved this. I wish we had talked about it, I don't know, a long time, like when it came out.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the way the cookie crumbles,
right?
As they say. So we've gotten to it now, and it's perfect, you know, to get to it whenever we get to it. So I thought it was an excellent exploration and illustration of the ways that emergent strategies work with organizers in tandem with the way that people are already doing things.
Yes.
And I really appreciated the way that Andrea Ritchie introduced this book and how she described herself as being a very unlikely proponent of emergent strategy.
Yeah.
Given her focus on policy and 10-step strategic plans.
I felt that in some way, like sort of, I don't want to call her type A. I feel like I'm a little type A. Like we'd have a way of approaching the world and the way that we see things. And so she owned that for herself in so many ways. I loved it.
Yeah, there's not always a to-do list on the way to abolition.
No.
There's always things to do, but it's not always going to show up in this nice, tidy, like, here's 10 steps. Each step has 5 sub-steps. We have to complete each sub-step to complete the step.
Uh-huh.
And then we move on to the next step.
Right.
And so it's not linear. It's not like that. And I think that this is, she does such a great job of breaking that down and introducing the book. And I appreciated that, I guess, vulnerability from the beginning, you know, where she just starts talking. I was like, this is not something that 20 years ago you would have caught me saying I would be imagining doing now.
Absolutely.
Which I thought was really great. So she describes this change in her perspective in the introduction, where she says, quote, "There is no top-down approach that will yield the world we want. We can't legislate, policy make, or litigate our way out of economic, climate, or political collapse, or out of the violence of policing." And I think this was one of the major reasons why emergent strategies resonated with me when I read the book by Adrienne Marie Brown a few years ago, and why I've been thinking about it since then. And, you know, we can't find our way to a new world by copying the way our current world operates.
Not at all.
Or, as Andrea goes on to say later on the same page, quote, we can't continue to organize in ways that replicate and legitimize the systems we are seeking to dismantle. We can't afford to waste time and energy trying to use the same old frameworks and tools to make radical change. So to me, it's no surprise that she goes on to reference Audre Lorde's famous line that the master's tools cannot dismantle the master's house.
Right.
Because, of course, it's all connected there. And throughout the book, one of the things I loved was that she consistently references other abolitionist thinkers and organizers and demonstrates how interconnected this work is. So she'll make a point and then say, in other words, as so-and-so says.
Yes.
And it just demonstrates, I think, a lot of ways how emergent all these things are and how interconnected they all are, how interdependent they all are.
Hey.
And because she works at Interrupting Criminalization, it was also fun to understand a lot of the references throughout the book to their work based on our conversations here.
Absolutely.
And the things that we've read from them and talked about from them. So yeah, love this book. So great. Looking forward to our conversation today and you know, where we're going to take this.
Yeah, I appreciated that too. There's so much work that she did in this book to not only be vulnerable and share her perspective on things, but as you say, like to also reference other abolitionist thinkers, other organizations. There are chapters that are solely devoted to sharing what organizations are doing in this work and in this way and affecting real change in their communities. And I think that provides a real concrete example of what this could be and what this could look like for more of us, all of us in so many ways. And so there's so much there. The book is so layered and phenomenal in that way that we've got both this scholarly analysis of what emergent strategy is, but we've also got what it looks like in practice, right?
Yeah, it's got some collage-like elements to it in my mind, because she's writing very effectively about what emergent strategy is.
Yes.
And then other people are contributing to the book in how they're doing those things.
Yes.
And she's contributing to that too, but it feels like a way to bring together all these different things that are happening into this kind of collage of a book.
I love that description. Very good. Yeah. It's, again, it's a phenomenal book. For me, there's so much about emergent strategy that I appreciated learning about and wrapping my head around as I think about, like, how do we make this world a better place for all of us? And I appreciated the time that Andrea took in this book to address the fact that we certainly are up against some truly powerful forces of oppression as well. And so in one of the chapters, and I don't remember which one specifically, I pulled this great quote. She said, practicing emergent strategies doesn't mean that we are no longer trying to affect large systems. It doesn't mean eschewing the systemic for the interpersonal or vice versa. Emergence is an invitation to hold a dual focus. As someone living in a time of climate collapse, mounting fascism, and rising rates of white supremacist, gender-based, homophobic, transphobic, colonial, and anti-Black violence, I am painfully aware that large systems are increasingly constraining possibility at every scale. And then just a little bit later, she says, quote, none of the changes I want to see in the world are possible without eliminating a global economic system built on racial capitalism and the structural violence it requires and produces along the axes of race, gender, sexuality, disability, class, and nation, operating in the lives of Black women, trans and gender nonconforming people, and our communities everywhere. By definition, this requires large-scale systemic change. Mm-hmm. And so again, I think, you know, no one is denying that all of these systems of oppression are massive. And they have an effect on each and every one of us, both at the individual level and in our communities and in our families and in all ways in which we interact with each other and live this life. But I think the notion of affecting change at the local level and in the small scale, which emergent strategies push us to do, has a lot of merit.
Yeah.
And we've seen the success of those strategies and in lots of places and spaces, as we just talked about in this book. She highlights examples of how that's working and what that looks like in places across the country. So to me, it's the work at the small scale that has been able to grow and affect those larger systems, that stands out to me. I think in many ways it shows me that it's proven, it's powerful. It's a way to change the world at every level and in the ways in which we interact with each other. But also when you think about what took place in 2020, when we all banded together and did the thing, to me, there's so much power in what emergent strategies offer us.
Yeah, and I think that that's a great example is 2020 because, and she talks about this in the book, there's so many ways that people were activated and pulled into the street because they were already in community with people, or they already knew ways to plug into networks of people who are organizing and doing demonstrations. And so people were operating on a small scale that turned large when the moment called for it.
You're right.
And I think one of the other things you said was, you know, we understand how large these systems are, these systems of oppression are, and how, you know, it's almost hard to comprehend really how massive they are, which I think one of the beauties of emergent strategies is focusing on the small, is focusing on what it is you can control or influence.
Yes.
Because you can't possibly change the whole thing all at once.
Right.
So what are the things that you can change? What are the things that you can do?
Right.
Because that gives you something to do versus feeling frozen and stuck because I can't possibly change that whole thing.
Absolutely.
I can't make white supremacy as a system go away. I can't make capitalism as a system go away. But what are the things I can do in my realm, in my world, in my sphere of influence, so to speak, that upends those things in a small way now, but also maybe that reverberates and becomes something much larger down the road, depending on who it is I'm working with and what it is we're doing.
Absolutely. You say in a small way in my community, but it also makes a difference to you and to the people around you. And I don't want to minimize that. I think that's so important. If you can affect change in your neighborhood, in your community, in your family, wherever you
in
yourself, that is powerful. That's important. And as you say, that has a ripple effect.
Yeah. One of the things that I believe is connected to the fractal piece, which is what we're talking about, the small scale moving to the large scale, is that you change yourself to change the world, which was, I believe, Grace Lee Boggs, who influenced and taught Adrienne Marie Brown in Detroit for a number of years. And so there's that. That's part of that lineage, too. They talk about Detroit in the book, too.
Yes.
And how people organized in Detroit influenced so much of what we're seeing today, too.
Absolutely.
But anyway, that's a whole huge tangent. I wanted to actually talk about the principles of emergent strategy because I think sharing these gives a really nice context to the rest of our conversation and what we're going to talk about. So there are six principles here, and I've paraphrased from a list in the book to condense it a little bit because otherwise I would talk for too long here. So the first one is fractal, which we just talked about, but it's recognizing how we are at the small scale is how we are at the large scale. Patterns repeat at scale. The large is a reflection of the small.
That's right.
The next one is adaptive. So we focus on how we live and grow and stay purposeful in the face of constant change. In other words, change is constant.
Yes.
And as an aside, there's some influence and inspiration there from Octavia Butler.
Yes.
And her book, Parable of the Sower and Parable of the Talents, and the character there who talks about change. The next principle, nonlinear and iterative, asking how do we learn from this, recognizing that there are no failures, only lessons, and that what you pay attention to grows.
Yes.
The next one, resilient and transformative, focusing on how we recover and transform, seek understanding, build resilience by building relationships, move at the speed of trust, nurturing critical connections more than critical mass, keep a systemic view, even if it appears in individual behavior, which that one I could not edit down.
Yeah, no.
All of that is has to be said. And I think nurturing critical connections more than critical mass is one of the things that led to 2020 and what we saw in 2020 and people being able to respond in the way they did and get out in the streets in the way they did.
Yes.
And I just love that phrase, keep a systemic view, even if it appears in individual behavior, because it reminds us how much our individual behavior is tied to the systemic stuff that we take in the world. Interdependent and decentralized, attending to and supporting authentic relationships, fostering mutual resilience, collaboration, and shared leadership and vision. And then the last one, create more possibilities, focusing on how we move toward life and shape the future toward abundance, and recognizing that there are many pathways and ways to grow the future. So that's all six. To repeat them again real quick, just the word fractal, adaptive, nonlinear and iterative, resilient and transformative, interdependent and decentralized, and create more possibilities. So these are ways that we can operate with one another. They're not necessarily things that you would take direction from.
Right.
These aren't going to be things that you lay out a 10-point plan around. But they are things that tell you how you can do that 10-point plan more effectively with one another.
Right.
And I think that that's the beauty of emergent strategies is I think it takes strategy a little bit and flips it on its head, mm-hmm. and also reconnects strategy with so much of this is based in nature. A lot of it is based in some indigenous ways of knowing and being that has influenced organizing over the years. And I wanted to share those because I think they're so beautiful.
Yes.
And I think they really give us a way of how we do things with one another, how we do things with our collaborators, our co-conspirators.
How we do things with ourselves, right?
Yes,
so many of these point to, as you say, like the individual level, but also with our co-conspirators and, you know, the effect that all of that has on the large scale. And
yeah.
I think that's this beauty of what emergent strategy is. When you think about these principles individually, but also in connection with each other.
Yeah, it is. It's the individual level, it's the group level, and it's the systemic level. And it's all like, they're all connected and it demonstrates that connection. And so, I love that. There's also all these really great symbols that go along with all of them.
Yes.
So, I think.
And there's no way we could talk about that, right? I think you have to look at the book and see them.
Yeah.
But I definitely spent some time with them as well. And yeah, they're beautiful. And
they're so great,
illustrative of what these principles are all about. So thank you for bringing the principles to the table. This really makes me think about how there's just way too much in this book for us to talk about.
Absolutely.
in one episode. And there's so many great examples of emergent strategies at work in lots of places across the country. But one of the ones I wanted to highlight that I kind of like that Leonardo DiCaprio meme of like, yes, right? this initiative called Relationships Evolving Possibilities, REP. They're a community-based public safety initiative in the Minneapolis area and serve as an interconnected network of projects created by communities focused on enacting public safety. And they center Black life, liberation, and joy in all of their work. And I mentioned that Leo gift because it made me, when I read it, I stopped in my tracks and I thought, oh my gosh, we just talked about the Healing and Justice Center down in Miami. Mm-hmm. And the connection was there for me and a lot of the work that they do. One initiative that REP provides is what they call pod mapping or collective care, where people are linked together in pods and they support each other through crises. Yeah. And they have talked about and they have agreed upon parameters around how they will support each other. And so that's phone call number one. I'm in crisis. Okay, what do I do? I don't call 911. I call my pod people.
Yep.
So that's phone call number one. But then they also have this second circle of support when your first circle is not available, or maybe it might be too much for your first circle to handle. And it's a hotline that they run where they have people that you can call to be connected with a community resource or responder who's trained in mental health and de-escalation. And it was just beautiful to read about. And it's one of many examples in the book around how this is emergent strategy at play. But it's all about, I think, how we talk to and engage with not only ourselves, but with our communities, how we support and take care of one another, and how we sort of push this shift in how our society can respond to our needs in ways that heal instead of harm one another. And I just think we need more of that. We need more of REP in Minneapolis. We need more of the Healing and Justice Center in Miami. We need this response more than we need the alternative.
Yeah, because the alternatives aren't working.
Not
and they're violent and they're killing people.
Yes.
So yeah, I had a similar reaction. I was like, this all sounds familiar. Hey. This all sounds connected.
Yes.
Familiar is not the right word. It sounds connected. They're related. They're cousins.
Yes. And I love it. And I love that.
Yes. So one of the other things I appreciate in this book is the focus on imagination, which I've talked about a little bit. And I think I've talked about in the past too on past episodes, because this is number 150, so it's hard for me to keep track of all
That's
the other episodes.
So exciting. 150.
It is. Little aside there. So I think the focus on imagination and building the new worlds that we need, you know, the new ways of being that will mean the end of policing and prisons and all the things that go with them and come from them, because we don't need the things anymore.
Right.
And so she flips some of the so-called common sense logic on its head when she writes, quote, "This is the time to be unrealistic in our demands for change."
Yes.
We are told repeatedly we need to be realistic, but that is just another method of social control. We are told true liberation is an impossible dream by the powers that be over and over again, because us believing that it is an impossible dream is the only thing between here and the new just futures we want. And one of the things that I think this means to me is that we need to be unrealistic, because being realistic is what got us where we are.
Yes.
We're sitting in the realism of the past right now. So what does a future look like if we continue to be realistic with our demands, with our work, with our imaginations? It probably looks the same.
Yes.
And that's not what we want.
No.
So if we're unrealistic, we can stretch and we can reach for the things that we need. We can stretch for actual public safety and healthcare and having all of our economic needs met, and things like the Healing and Justice Center in Miami and REP in Minneapolis. Like, all of these things can be the reality, and they're not. So maybe REP and Healing Justice Center aren't good examples because they're very realistic and exist in the now and the here, but those things aren't realistic everywhere. And so if that's the model for what can be realistic, but not everybody sees it as realistic, like, that's still us being unrealistic and saying, you know, we need something like this.
Yes.
Everywhere.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you brought this. This part of the book stopped me in my tracks, because I think it was so powerful. And just this idea of thinking, and it reminded and connected me to that piece we read that talked about civil discourse and uncivil discourse. Mm-hmm. Like, we have to demand the things that we want and we need, and we don't need to be civil about it. We need to be unrealistic about our demands now, right? And I think in that same chapter, I think it ended with this exercise or this invitation to journal and to think about and imagine what 50 years from now will look like, you know, to answer these questions around, you know, what would your schedule look like? What does the future look like? What are your daily interactions with people look like? What are you excited about, happy about, joyful about? And I love that. So this idea of imagination and building the world we want and the world we need, I think, is such an important piece of this too.
Yeah.
And she's absolutely right. And we've seen this in other places. We can't continue to live in a world and replicate the systems that exist. We have to dream of what's new. So
yeah,
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Hey there, folks. Sorry for the interruption, but we wanted to invite you to join us over on Patreon.
Yeah, we're so excited to be on Patreon and be able to create some additional content and opportunities for us to learn and unlearn together.
That's right. We'll be rolling out some new ways you can join us in our collective learning and unlearning over the next few weeks.
So you can join for free and get some regular updates from us. And we'll also have paid tiers available as well, with extra content available each month.
You can find us at patreon.com/interdependent study. And join us today.
That's right. You can join right now at patreon.com/interdependent study. Okay, now back to the episode.
patreon.com/interdependent study.
All right. Well, since we're dreaming, let's shift our conversation and talk about application. How does this book and our conversation about it apply to our everyday lives? You know, I was struck by so much of this book, and particularly this idea that emergent strategies are tools that can open up more possibilities towards abolition. Mm-hmm. And early on, you talked about some incredible quotes, these really sort of poignant matter-of-fact statements from her introductory chapter that I thought were great. We can't replicate the same systems that exist. And I love those statements because they didn't mince any words. They didn't mince words about the urgency of the situation that we're in and the violence that's all around us. And so one of the things I pulled from that same chapter just a little bit later from those quotes that you read was this, quote, "Transformative demands for laws or policies that defund the police, curtail the power of systems of policing and punishment, end criminalization, ensure that everyone's material needs are met without conditions, and that increase the legitimacy and resources available to abolitionist community-based safety strategies build our movement." Mm-hmm. And to me, that's the application. Those are the things we need. And I think the ways that emergent strategy have been effective in strengthening organizing and helping real people and communities in ways that we've learned about in this book and so many more are the incredible takeaways from this book for me.
Yeah. I think that those are, it's all bringing things into concrete reality.
Yeah.
And from these beautiful concepts into like concrete.
Yes, from the abstract
reality.
Yeah. Absolutely.
My application comes from this chapter called Practice.
Oh, yeah.
Which I have parentheses, a conclusion.
Yeah.
On it too. Andrea writes, quote, "The question, what are you practicing, always brings me back to myself, my values, my intention, my commitment. Am I practicing policing and punishment, or am I practicing embodying and receiving love with boundaries for the sake of ancestral healing and bringing into being the world I long for? Am I practicing doing what I've been taught, what I have always done, and what will likely continue to lead to the same results? Or am I practicing being the person I need and want to be and to become to fulfill my purpose, to contribute to building a world where Black women, girls, trans, and non-binary people can freely love and be fully loved? What is the person, politic, future I am practicing?" And I think that's such a beautiful way to give us something to reflect on how we're bringing emergent strategies to life for ourselves and in our networks, whatever those networks might look like. And so that's my application, because I think it just encourages us to think about this, all of this, and think about what it means for us personally.
Absolutely. And it's a piece that we talked about earlier about her bringing her vulnerability to this work, and she names who she is and what's important to her. And it's something we can all do for ourselves. Yep. It's an exercise we can all engage in for ourselves. So I really appreciated that last chapter, her conclusion of this book. Very, very good. All right, well, let's move on to homework. What do we want to do to continue our learning once we leave the table today? I don't think I mentioned this at the top or when I introduced this piece last week, but this book is actually part of a larger series of books on emergent strategy, and you've referenced a couple of them. The books are Emergent Strategies, Pleasure Activism, We Will Not Cancel Us, Holding Change, and Fables and Spells, which are all by Adrienne Marie Brown, as well as Undrowned by Alexis Pauline Gums, who wrote one of the introductions, Begin the World Over by Kung Lee Sun, Liberated to the Bone by Susan Raffo, and Jesus Devil by Alexis DeVoe. And I was shocked. I was like, that's a lot of books. So I just kind of want to check all of them out for homework and engage in even more learning about emergent strategies, because I know there's a whole lot more we can learn.
Yeah, I agree with all that. And you know we've read one of those.
We did. We did. All right. I should have mentioned that. Yes.
I was just making sure.
Yeah. We've read a lot of books. But yeah. Yes.
We read one of those like first year
of
the podcast. So there's a lot of great stuff in those books. I've read four of them now, I guess. And some of them are speculative fiction. So that's really cool. And I love how Adrienne Marie Brown emphasized the importance of fiction in emergent strategies, because it takes us out of ourselves.
Yes.
And out of our realistic minds, like I mentioned a little while ago, into something unrealistic, something that we create.
Absolutely.
So yeah, let's read all of those books. The other thing for homework, you reminded me of that quote of the journal entry.
Oh, yeah.
I think like that would be great homework. So I'm going to read from it real quick. So try this. Imagine it's 50 years in the future and social justice movements have continued winning and advancing liberation. What would your life be like? And what would your everyday routine be? You could write out your daily schedule. You could write a journal entry from the year 2070. You could write a letter to a loved one talking about the changes that have occurred over your life.
Wow. I remember that pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah. You did a great job. Yeah. And I So that's the other piece of homework. I think that would be great to for us to like sit and think and write about that. And
yes.
Maybe talk about it right here.
Absolutely. I love that. Very good. Well, again, I don't know that we did this book justice because there's so much in it. We did it justice, but we could do a whole lot more justice to it because it's a long book and just chock full of such incredible wisdom and examples of emergent strategy at play. And so many thanks to Andrea Ritchie for writing such an incredible book and for sharing it with us.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for publishing this and getting out of your comfort zone to write
it. Yes, I love it. All right, my friend. Well, you're up next time. Mm-hmm. What are you bringing to the table in our next episode?
I'm bringing an article from In These Times called The War on Protest, which is actually their cover story for this month's issue.
Oh, very cool.
The article is written by Adam Fetterman and is about how, quote, political repression is on the rise as the state finds new ways to criminalize dissent and collective action. This feels super relevant in the wake of the Supreme Court non-decision. I don't remember exactly how that worked, but about protesting from a couple weeks ago and from the way that the NYPD was brought in by Columbia University to clear out the demonstrations that students were organizing there for Free Palestine. And we've talked about stuff like this before with laws like the one in Florida a year or so ago. I can't keep track of the time, but I think we're only going to see more and more of repression because, as Andrea Ritchie says in today's book, fascism's go-to move is to criminalize all experiments that give the people more life chances, which I think applies to the experiments that demand that we give people more life chances too.
Absolutely.
So I'm excited to talk about it. I'm not excited about it as a topic.
Yes.
But I think it's an important topic for us to talk about and learn about and be able to take in.
So, I appreciate that, that vulnerability and that acknowledgement of where our conversation might go. But I am on In These Times email list. And so I saw that piece and I thought that might be a good one. So I'm glad you're bringing it to the table.
Snatched it from me.
Well, it was your turn. So timing worked out for you. Very good. All right. Well, thank you, my friend. Mm-hmm. And for folks listening, we want to thank you for joining us today. You know what we want you to do, but in case you forgot, please follow, leave a rating and review, share our podcast with the people in your life, follow us on the socials, including Instagram and TikTok, check us out on YouTube, and sign up and join us on Patreon to get notified about any new things we've got going on behind the scenes.
Yes, thank you so much for listening and for being here for 150 episodes.
Woohoo!
Even if this is your first one.
Yes.
We're so glad you're here.
Yes.
And remember, it's not about us, but it is about all of us. And we'll talk to you next week.